3, 2, 1. Welcome to another episode of Fit to Teach, where every Monday we provide evidence-based health and wellness information to support teachers and school employees on the wellness journey. My name is Kyle Pfaffenbach. I'm an associate professor of health and human performance at Eastern Oregon University and the director of the EOU Lab for Exercise Assessment and Performance, which we call the LEAP. I'm joined by LEAP intern Nathan Marshall. What's up, Nathan?
What's up, Kyle?
For Fit to Teach each week, we provide a summary of a research paper, or this week we're going to be talking about a book that provides insight into some aspect of health and wellness, and we also suggest an achievable action item that teachers and staff can focus on for the week. The goal is that by trying these activities throughout each week, that healthy habits will accumulate and you can find out what health and wellness activities are a good fit for you. So let's get into it. Couple things. First, getting comfortable here. First, we didn't have an episode last week, right?
Mm-mm. We did not.
And so we posted a classroom call with you and Edgar.
Yeah.
How'd that go?
Went great.
What'd you guys talk about?
We talked about nutrition a lot.
Yeah.
That was fairly brief, though, in terms of what we covered on the mm-hmm. podcast before.
Yep.
Talked about polarized training, which I mm-hmm. thought was, we had a really interesting discussion about that. And, cool. Balancing cardio and lifting. And
cool.
I think Edgar gave some cool perspective because he's still pursuing soccer. So mm-hmm. he's working in that, balancing that. I don't know. It's just a different level of training when you're pursuing a sport at that level, I think. It's just
especially a dynamic sport like soccer, where you have to be fit, you have to be strong, you have to be fast, you have to be able to move, you have to have skill. It's like a lot of different things to juggle in terms of progressing and optimizing in each of those areas.
Yeah. So he's good at that. So that was some cool perspective for sure.
Very cool. Okay. We hope you enjoyed that. We'd love to have Edgar back in the game. I was out last week for traveling, so I had to go to New York City. For those of you that may or may not know, I consult for a professional track and field team around nutrition, and a couple times a year, we have big like national championship races. There's one for indoor track and one for outdoor track. So the indoor track one was in New York City. So I was there for a couple of days, and it's basically like a conference. It's like a big gathering of track and field, different people in that sport. It's a very niche sport, but it's quite popular. Track and high school cross country are the two most popular high school sports in the country.
I don't get it, but that's just me.
Running is cool because it's so accessible.
Yes, that's true.
And it's so accessible, and it doesn't require a lot of equipment, doesn't require a lot of club coaching and traveling and all these other different types of things. The problem with it is that they don't do an awesome job marketing it.
That's true.
And so there's some really great stories, really great personalities, really great, but it's a very niche sport, even though it's quite popular. Yeah. So we did that. And that brings us, the reason why that's an important segue is because it took me with traffic delays and accidents to Boise and weather delays in Salt Lake City. And I'm sure a lot of people can sympathize with this experience, but it was about, so what would that be? If I left at 6 a.m., let's see. So I left at 9 a.m. East Coast time on a Thursday, and I got to New York Friday at 2:30 a.m. So it's a 20-hour travel day. No, less. 17-hour travel day with changing 3 time zones.
Mm-hmm.
Working all day Friday, all day Saturday, all day Sunday, and leaving the track meet after the last event on Sunday to fly back to Boise. I didn't get into Boise until midnight on Sunday night, and I was back here for my 11 a.m. class Monday morning.
What time did you go to bed Sunday night?
So I actually got a hotel room in Boise. So I didn't get to bed until after 1 because my flight didn't land until 12:30. So I posted up at a hotel near the airport on Sunday night, slept until 7. So slept a couple hours, got up, drove home, quick shower, straight to class. And then since then, it's just been like, and the reason why we're talking about this is one, I wanted to bring up like how busy schedules can disrupt our normal routine. And a lot of times we think that, now in my case, this truly was like abnormal, but there are these periods of the time throughout the year where I just know I'm gonna get behind because there's these big ticket items that really throw you off. And a lot of times they make you sick because you get compromised, you're around a bunch of new, like you're traveling in a bunch of different places, you're eating a bunch of different food. A lot of times they throw off your exercise routine, they throw off your diet routine, especially when you go to places like New York, where we don't get East Coast bagels here. And if you love bagels and you go to New York, yeah, you just like pencil in that 3 pounds of bagel weight because it's so good. The food is so good in New York. Anyways, so you get off on these things. And ironically, I was re-listening to the book, this book about the importance of sleep while I was probably in the most sleep-deprived state that I've been, at least so far in 2025, for sure. Maybe even going back a, quite a bit farther than that. And yeah, I just wanted to talk about like sleep, the role sleep plays. This is probably going to be like a multiple. I think we can do a couple weeks on this just to talk about all the interesting aspects of it and individual. And then also just some of the things we can do for sleep hygiene, some of the things we can do to decrease the negative effects when we're traveling, and some of the things you can do to look ahead and, or sorry, plan ahead under those circumstances. And then, and I think it's just really relevant because as a society, and the book talks about this, it's called Why We Sleep, and it's by a sleep neuroscientist who has a PhD named Matthew Walker. And he does a really good job of, it's like when you get somebody that is like really in the weeds of the biology or physiology or molecular biology of something, but they can zoom out and talk to a broad audience about this important topic and why, without overwhelming them. He does a really good job of this in regards to sleep. So he's probably the one of the world's leading experts in sleep. There's probably a lot of people that are just as like smart as him around the sleep. His kind of strength, in my opinion, is his ability to communicate. And I'm pretty hard on writers that try and write these diet books or exercise books or things like that. And I think he does a really good job with this. So it's called Why We Sleep, Matthew Walker. And I would really encourage people to like listen to it or find time to explore it a little bit or even read some of the main principles behind it because he brings up a lot of really interesting things around sleep and how little we value it and just how important it is. It's so important. And we consistently hear from teachers that they don't get enough sleep, they don't get enough exercise, and they have high rates of burnout. And I don't think those things are unrelated. I
That
don't know.
makes
What's your
sense.
sleep situation?
I don't know. It's weird. I get really anxious about it. Like I always have. Like it was always like, because when I was a little kid, my parents used to like when I couldn't sleep, they'd drive me around, and then I'd fall asleep in the car. And so that was like, and like I think I've been looking back at it now, it like worked, but like now it was like, I get really anxious about driving when I'm low on sleep. And it's like
Oh,
one of my,
interesting.
it's one of my
Still.
really, yeah, it's like a weird, it's probably the thing that makes me the most anxious is driving long distances the night
Interesting.
before. I get really anxious about it. So this is completely, I'm getting a little sidetracked, but anyways, but yeah, so it always has made me anxious. And I was always told you need 8 hours of sleep a night. And
So the question, I have a quick question about this. Do you still require soothing before you go to bed? Is it a pretty long process, or do you require like, do you see what I'm saying? Like, what's the like adult equivalent of getting driven around in the car? Is it white noise? Is it temperature? Is it pre-bed routine? Is it
I read. I think for me that if I like know I have to wake up early and I want to go to bed, I'll read.
Is that an electronic device or
No, just a book.
paper book? Okay.
Yeah. And it can switch. I mean, there's even been times where like I've read articles for a podcast like before bed. Like that's and that's been and it just yeah, it says you said lulls. It just lulls you to sleep, even if I'm interested in what I'm reading.
The book talks about this
Yeah.
actually. There's a really well done study that they he goes into detail about people that read tablets and was getting bright light, like reading articles, even if it's the same article, but it's being delivered on a tablet versus a paper book. And the people that read paper books several hours before they went to sleep or as they were trying to fall asleep had a much better time. Higher quality sleep, better quality sleep, less wake ups, all those different types of things. They did the study in a sleep lab to really burrow down in this. So
It's so interesting. It's so individual because like when I get anxious about it, so like I already like in high school and stuff, like in early years of college, I felt like I had a lot more anxiety. And so for me, it was really hard to fall asleep. I just have always had a hard time. And like being a student athlete, like I never slept good in hotels, like all the 4 years I've been
that's
here.
right. Yeah.
Like whenever in high school I had like a championship game, I would never sleep before. And it was
Yeah.
one of those things where I'd try and go to bed early and then I'd be there for an hour. Then I'd look at the clock, but okay, I'm only getting 6.5 hours of sleep. And then I'd roll over and then I'd be like, okay, it's 5.5 hours. And then I get really anxious. And this is where the driving stuff came in, is that's when I get really anxious about driving and that kind of stuff. But so for me, it was like, I've never been a person who sleeps great. I know
Got
there's
it.
people who can just roll over and fall asleep instantly and sleep 8 hours. And I get so jealous. I know a lot of
It
people.
is.
One of my best friends is that way. My girlfriend's that way. And they, no matter what's going on in their life, they can put their phone down, their book down, and just fall asleep
Fall
and sleep
asleep.
for 8 hours.
The book actually does a really good job of talking about this. It's called sleep pressure. And sleep pressure comes from like a multitude of different things. There's your, and what I really liked about the book is that he uses like, he doesn't dumb down the language. So he talks about things like the suprachiasmatic nucleus or the SCN. And he talks about adenosine signaling, a neurotransmitter signaling, and things like that. But he does a really good job of explaining and using examples of what those things mean. So basically, our SCN, our suprachiasmatic nucleus, is sensitive to light. It's a non-image responsive part of our brain that dictates our circadian rhythm, essentially. And so what happens is that when you have bright light and it's coming through your eyes, it's hitting non-image forming cells that's affecting your suprachiasmatic nucleus from telling the, I think the pituitary gland or the, no, the pineal gland from releasing melatonin. And so when we're getting lots of bright light, excuse me, when we're getting lots of bright light, especially in the evening, it's being sensed through this mechanism and it's suppressing the release of melatonin. The other thing that happens is that if there is like an increase in things like cortisol or noradrenaline or other things that are making us anxious, the things that are released when we're anxious, those things can also prevent like sleep pressure from taking hold and getting us to fall asleep. Because the idea is that if I'm going to be in danger, I don't want to fall asleep. And so that's where some of that anxiety and disconnect comes from. He does a really good job of unpacking this stuff. And there are ways to try and get yourself into a more, to get yourself into a better state to where you can succumb to that sleep pressure. The other thing is you may just like not, like the way your games are and society is and your school schedule and your work schedule may be putting pressure on you to sleep outside of your natural circadian rhythm. At your age, people typically are in your 20s. This starts in your teens and it continues through your 20s and it starts to shift back a little bit. But people want to stay up later and sleep in later. But a lot of times you have like stuff going on in the morning and it puts pressure on you to. So there's a multiple things going on here. And one of the things that the book does a really good job of is he's talking about how it is not like a discipline failing or a moral failing if you don't like to get up in the morning. If you know that about yourself, you need to find ways to try and embrace that. And he also talks about how it's just important to be in bed for a certain amount of time. And typically, when you give yourself 8 or 9 hours in bed, you're usually going to get 7 or 8 hours of actual sleep. And that's a really good place to be. It's not 8 hours of like eyes closed, semi-comatose. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I've heard that before. It's you're still allowing your body, like the word, like you're allowing your body to rest, just laying there. And I thought that's like a comforting thought, especially when I would like wasn't getting enough sleep. And I knew in high school I knew I wasn't getting enough sleep. But I was like applying for college, I was playing sports. I just sacrificed it.
This is a huge, he, the book, and he does a really good convincing job of talking about how this is like an epidemic, especially for high school students, because we make high school students start in the morning. They don't want to be there. They're tired all throughout the day. It's a huge source of stress for teachers is trying to just get students to be like awake and present and ready to learn in class. And it's like this thing where you're like, hey, you guys got to go to bed earlier and you'll feel better, but they can't go to bed earlier because your circadian rhythm in your late teens shifts so far towards what's called the night owl. We would be way better off starting school at 10 or 11 p like 10 or 11 a.m. Mm-hmm. and not having lunch or having a shorter lunch, not having any open period and still getting out at 2 or 3 and just doing it all back to back than we are starting early in the morning and dragging the school day out. It's a huge challenge. And you're from Seattle. There are school districts in Seattle that have shifted to a late start model because the science is like overwhelming. It's very convincing. Mm-hmm. That we are not putting our young people in a position to succeed by making them get up early.
Yeah, that's fair. It makes sense. One thing that I am like grateful for is I think that I have heard that some people need more sleep than others.
100%.
Yeah. 100%. And I know that me and my sister, there's something where she goes to bed super early and she gets 8 or 9 hours and sometimes she'll still be tired, where I can get 6 or 7 for a couple nights and I'll be fine. So that's nice now knowing that.
It's interesting that he would argue. It'd be interesting to get what his thought is on that, because I wonder if he would argue that you're finding a way to function, but you'd actually even be able to function better if you got more sleep.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
You don't know.
There's no way.
A lot of people don't know. A lot of people get used to this like new baseline and they think that, and they're functioning at some level and they think that is like sufficient, but there may be these like long-term things that are occurring that you don't really realize it in real time. So inflammation, for example, or having your brain getting the time it needs to do its like housekeeping and things like that, which is what, and he goes into like really great detail about this. Great, not in excellent, but great as in like fine detail. Yeah. And it's really interesting. And I would encourage people to look at it, grab it, listen to it on an audio book, a chapter at a time. He talks about this where you can just, the book doesn't build on itself. So you can read the chapters you're most interested in or go back and revisit things that you found were interesting or things that were applicable and stuff like that. And I really like that he did that. It's like a resource manual as well as a really interesting informational book. And the point is that there may be detrimental consequences you're not aware of to that. And those could be mood swings that you think is just part of your personality. It could be increasing, like potentially compromising like vascular function, increasing risk for a whole bunch of different things. It's interesting.
But I think about it too, because when you say these things, it's like, all right, if I go to bed tonight,
yeah,
and I'm laying in bed and I'm like, okay, boom, clock from 8 hours starts ticking. It's that stuff stresses me out thinking about it. It does.
Like, it does. Yeah. Especially when you're like health conscious.
Yeah.
And especially if you're like, okay, that means. So I think one of the points that he makes is like, you want to do as many things as you can to enhance sleep pressure. So you don't just want to go, okay, I'm going to bed at 9 o'clock and that's it. If you're used to going to bed at 11 o'clock, the first week of you going to bed at 9 o'clock is not going to go well. It's basically like taking a cross country flight. So that's the first thing you need to be aware of, that anytime you're transitioning your sleep and awake time, there's going to be like a period of adjustment there. Two is your body may not want to go to bed at 9 o'clock. The problem is if you have to get up at 7 or 6, then to get that 8 hours in bed, it's even if you're in bed, you're not going to want to fall asleep when you're in bed and you're not going to want to get up when it's time to get up. This is my life. I'm a night person, but I have kids and I have a job and I can get it to where I can fall asleep pretty well around 10, get up around 6 or 6:30 and be okay, but it's not what I want to be. And when I have travel, like I had this week, it really gets thrown off and things like that. So if you're experiencing that type of anxiety around it, you want to do as many things as you can to put yourself in a state that is, so turn down the lights, wear blue blocking glasses, stay off your phone, don't eat before you go to bed. There's a lot of like good things we know that you can do for sleep hygiene that can enhance that pressure, that sleep pressure.
Yeah. Do you think, I want to ask you too, because I know you've talked, you need a lot of sleep.
I need a lot of sleep.
But I also, you respond to my emails at 9:30. I'm like, okay, but I know you also wake up early. I'm curious, like, how do you
get it so caught?
Yeah. Like, how do you balance it?
So I do better at other times than I don't. It's interesting because we were just talking about this in class when we were talking about being present and mindful and things like that. What I find is when I'm the most stressed, it's the hardest time for me to slow down. And I react to every thought that kind of comes into my head. And so I'll check my email even when I don't have a specific purpose for checking my email, and I'm not aiming to answer emails at that time. Like when you go and check your email just because you're bored, that's not good, because it's going to put a bunch of, it's going to distract your thoughts and put you into a bunch, into this state where, so what when I can tell that I'm overreaching and I'm overstressed and things like that is when I'm doing things like that. And it sounds counterintuitive because you think, wow, he stays up late, he responds to email late, he gets up early. That's not my goal. That's like not good modeling in terms of work-life balance and stuff like that. And it's usually when I'm the most stressed, the most sleep deprived, experiencing the least sleep pressure because of disruptions to my exercise schedule, my diet schedule, and because of like things like this traveling, that I'm just sitting there. I don't know if I should sleep. I don't know if I'm awake. I don't feel like sitting down and being super productive. So I'll check my email and then I'll see something. And it's okay. This won't take me long to respond to. Whereas normally I schedule email time. Like between this time and this time, I'm responding to emails. I think that's way healthier because it's a 24-hour bombardment if you don't.
Yeah. So do you wear like blue light glasses or like plug your phone in?
I do a couple things that I think work pretty well, and I'm trying to do more. I'm motivated to do more after reading this book. So the one thing is we do, and I'll credit my wife for this. She was like so strict in terms of our child's sleep schedule, our children's sleep schedule. And I used to be like, this is so annoying that they have to be like, we have to arrange our whole day around their nap schedule. And it's all, and the more that I read and the more that I see, the more I realize how like super important this is. So the number one thing is getting our kids to bed at a decent time and getting them through their bedtime process. And it always takes longer than you think it's going to take. So like it takes you 5 minutes to wash your face and brush your teeth. It takes them 40 minutes to put their PJs on and then do this and do that. And they'll wind down with something like an episode of Bluey or something like that. Or like we're getting to the point now where I say, go to your room and start reading and then I'll come in and tuck you in. So that process starts pretty early. So once that's done, the house gets super quiet and I actually start to get tired. So we'll do things like we try and keep the lights pretty low as it gets. Last night I wore blue light glasses for the first time in a long time. I don't know. I think there's individual levels of sensitivity to blue light and stuff because I'll look at my phone before I go to bed, but I still fall asleep really well. So my problem is not falling asleep. My problem is like getting deep sleep and getting, and so I wear wearables and I compare them all. And so I have a Whoop, I have an Apple Watch, I have an Oura Ring, I have a sleep app on my phone. And I, cause I'm just interested, not, I'm interested. One, I want to know about that. So when people ask me, should I buy one of these things? I have an informed take on it.
Yeah, for sure.
The other thing though, is that I am really interested to see what these different things say they're picking up from a biology standpoint. And then I check in with how I feel. Ultimately, how I feel is the number one thing. And I was excited to talk about this week because I feel like crap this week. And I'm like, and I have no choice but to push through, right? I can't just be like, I wish I could just call a timeout and sleep for 2 days and take care of myself. I feel so much better, but I knew I was going to have to make it through this week. So the goal for this week was to like, not be too hard on myself, still be as productive as possible, take small breaks when I get the opportunity to. I knew my exercise was going to be off. And you're just trying to know that's temporary. And then it's not like I have to get back on shape. What's wrong with my life? It's more like I knew I was going to be off this week because of the travel that I had, and it's going to suck, but I did it anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. That makes sense. Yeah. It's hard in college.
It's hard, man. My sleep schedule in college was terrible. You guys are so far ahead of from a maturity standpoint and from an execution standpoint. And just even thinking about this, never once had a conversation about sleep in undergrad.
Yeah.
I usually stayed up till 3 or 4 in the morning.
It's crazy.
I tried to sleep until noon or 1 on a daily basis. If I could with work and different things like that, I couldn't take a job or take classes before that time. It was like not, I stayed up. I like stayed up all night all the time studying and stuff like that. And he breaks that down in the book. He's a professor at Berkeley, and he's completely rearranged the way he does classes and schedules and requires tests and things like that to promote the wellness of his students and prevent some of the things you're saying are really challenging.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's really cool because he's looking at it and going, it doesn't have to be this way. And we now have the evidence that this is really disruptive and not in the best long-term interest of the young people we're trying to educate and get ready for the world.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. I was thinking too, this is one thing for me. So my parents used to take my phone, freshman and sophomore.
Yeah, of course.
And I think part of junior year in high school.
Yeah, of course.
And I hated it. I was just so mad and I was so annoyed. And it was like I didn't fight my parents or push back too hard, but that was one of the things where I was like, okay, like I try and take it back. And I really didn't like it, but I'm so grateful for it. Cause like I was going to bed at 10 and like I had a routine. I'd do that. And then like I had this weird thing where like I'd plan my outfit. So like I'd try on clothes.
Yeah.
And for some reason that was like it was super soothing for me. So like I'd just like go through my closet and find clothes I wanted to wear and I'd hang them up and put it all organized.
Yep.
And then like I'd just fall asleep. And like I never had any trouble really with it. I mean, I'd still sometimes get anxious and I've always been prone to anxiety. And there were some nights where I didn't sleep well, but my phone was away at 10. And then at some point my parents just stopped doing that. And I, you know, obviously it just completely switched. And I think that's honestly the reason. Now, like looking back,
did you have like good habits and things like that, or better habits than your other?
No, I just think that's not why I don't. I just think that's not why I don't sleep as good anymore. Is I genuinely think it's my phone.
Oh yeah.
Like I think that the soul, and I do, and
a lot of the pro athletes I work with, they realize like that part of it, that this part of the story, and they have alarm, like actual alarm clocks, and their phone is not next to them when they sleep. It's in a different room. And they don't. Now, again, you have a lot of times you're not like, I need my phone close in case of emergency, like different things like that could potentially happen that aren't likely to happen. But if they did, you want to be like in earshot. But I'm pretty good about audiobooks have been a game changer.
Yeah.
Because then you're not looking at your phone. The other thing you can do is there's a setting. You can look this up on YouTube, like how to turn your phone into zero blue light.
Mm-hmm.
And it's totally different. You literally filter out the blue light and you can set it in the accessibility settings. So I just triple click my side button on my phone and it turns it into a red light.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the middle of the night, if I get a text or something happens that I actually need to check, it doesn't like bring me out of sleep because it doesn't have any of the light that we're like sensitive to from a sleep standpoint.
It's interesting. Yeah. This is funny. So my girlfriend asked for a super expensive clock for Christmas, like one of those really high tech, like it's
sunrise.
Sunrise. Yeah. The alarm is like waves.
Yeah, totally.
And I was like, I was like, okay, whatever. It's funny.
Yeah.
And I didn't think anything of it. And I've been there when it's gone off and I've like,
game changer.
Wow.
Game changer, especially in Seattle, dude.
It's crazy.
Game changer.
Like waking up to natural light is just so nice.
We're going to talk about this in a different episode because I actually am an advisor for a sleep mask company that builds lights into the sleep mask that can change your circadian rhythm through light pulses. But it can also, there's a sunrise feature to it and it slowly comes on inside the mask and wakes you up and you don't need an alarm when you have it.
It's great.
It's like, it makes such a big difference.
Yeah, that's insane.
It's funny, in the sleep book, he talks about all the crazy ideas people have. He said one of his favorite pastimes is to think of all the crazy ideas people have for alarms. And so one of them is an alarm that is like when it goes off in the morning, it explodes like toy blocks everywhere throughout the room, and the alarm will not shut off. It's super loud and annoying, and it won't shut off until the blocks are all collected and rearranged in the correct like order on top of the alarm clock, and then the alarm clock will stop. He also has one that is every time you hit the snooze, it sends like a $20 donation to a political campaign organization that you don't agree with.
That's hilarious.
And so there's some amazing things that people have come up with to get them out of bed and get them awake and functioning quickly.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Some pretty good.
Yeah. No, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
Pretty good ideas. But his argument is like, look, if you need a certain amount of time in bed, once you get that certain amount of time in bed on a regular basis, if you can go to sleep at the same time and get up at similar time. And this gets really tough, especially on the weekends, because people tend to stay up later on Friday and Saturday and go to sleep. And there's actually a term for it in the literature. It's called social jet lag. And the reason why people feel like crap on Monday morning is because it's basically the equivalent of taking a coast-to-coast flight from a circadian clock standpoint.
Yeah.
So one of the things that like the mask does, for example, is like, when you're staying up late and sleeping in on Friday and Saturday, you wear the mask and it gets your circadian clock ready to go on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a social jet lag preventer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we can go on and on about this. We're at 34 minutes, which is really long for us. So I think we could talk about sleep a lot more. I think this is super interesting, but I think this is a good place to stop. So if you're interested in this, check out the book, Matthew Walker. I think it's called Why We Sleep. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what you said.
Okay. And then, start just, I wouldn't say overhaul everything and buy every gadget you can get your hands on. I think the biggest thing is, do you check in with yourself every morning on just a scale of 1 to 10? How ready do I feel for the day on a scale of 1 to 10? 10 being like, I can't wait to get going. 1 being like, I just want to go back to bed and not get out of bed today. And then once you establish a little bit of like a 1 to 10 baseline about your readiness, you can start trying some of these things. I'm going to start to try and go to bed earlier. I'm going to start to, or add at the same time. That's the most important thing. I'm going to the bed at the same time. Maybe I reduce screen time the hour before I go to bed. I dim the lights. I get exercise at some level. I noticed that one affects me a lot when I look at all these metrics and stuff that I have. Like, I haven't been able to exercise this week. My sleep is garbage, even though my in-bed time has been sufficient. So I think you start really slow and try and figure this out and make it a lifelong mission, not I'm going to do this for the next 6 weeks, but it's going to turn my life upside down or whatever.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times we regress back to just what we were doing before. So you have to be really conscious about this on a daily basis to make these kind of changes, but it can be done. And for those of you that think I can't sacrifice the sleep because of I have to be productive, I have to work, all these different types of things, there's many examples and well-done studies suggesting that the more you sleep, the more efficient you are, and the more you can get done in a shorter period of time. So that's something that is really hard to experiment with. But even though I haven't exercised this week, I've been in bed fighting a little cold, I'm jet lagged, I'm way less productive when I sit down to do work this week than I am on the weeks when I'm getting a lot of sleep and actually, quote unquote, working less.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to show up as your best self, you have to show up rested.
Yeah, for sure.
So keep those things in mind. Hope you enjoyed this. I know we went a little long, but I think it's an interesting discussion. Anything else?
All for me.
Okay. That sounds great. Get my script here. Thanks for listening to Fit to Teach, where we provide insights into health and wellness for teachers and staff each week. We're super busy in the lab right now. So we classroom to calms on Fridays, maybe hit or miss. Just tune in, subscribe, follow the podcast on wherever you get your podcasts. But we're going to work really hard to keep these Fit to Teaches coming. The classroom to calms may be a little more hit and miss. Just thanks for your patience on that. And remember, if you haven't come in for your teacher testing, schedule it with Nathan. The lab is rolling. We just got a brand new treadmill. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Works awesome. Okay. All right. Sounds good. We'll talk to you guys later. Thank you.
Good rest of your week.